Welcome to Indie Film Weekly, a No Film School podcast. It is Thursday, March 17th, and we're bringing you a special edition from the South by Southwest Film Festival. I'm Liz Nord, editor-in-chief of No Film School, and I'm here with...
Ryan Koo.
Oakley Anderson Moore.
Micah Van Hove.
All four of us have been on the ground here at South by Southwest Film Festival, and we'll be bringing you all the news that's fit to speak about.
No Film School's coverage of South by Southwest 2016 is brought to you by Song Freedom.
If you're tired of a limited selection of music that's overpriced or just can't stomach the generic elevator music anymore, then you need to check out Song Freedom.
Register for free to get on their mailing list for the upcoming announcements of thousands of additional songs and a new pricing structure that will blow your mind.
So the 2016 South by Southwest Awards were announced last night, and our own Micah Van Hove was in attendance. Micah, what was the award show like?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was not that good. It was no, it was, you know, it's pretty. It was like a little above average for your usual award ceremony thing, because we had Mike Birbiglia, who was cracking really hilarious, often inappropriate jokes the whole time. And I just always find it amazing how comedians can tell the truth, what everybody's thinking, aka, you know, this event is boring and mostly fluff, and everybody will laugh at it and still accept what they say, and they just find a way to say the truth with such grace that they can say anything. And so, yeah, Mike Birbiglia was up there just saying whatever he wanted, berating the programmers for being drunk and all kinds of other funny stuff, and everybody was just eating it up. So that was cool.
That's good. It should be a good time.
And you had interviewed Mike Birbiglia earlier in the week, right?
Yeah, I talked to Mike and Ira Glass about their film Don't Think Twice, and which was my favorite film of the festival so far. So it was cool to, yeah, just get to be around their vibe, because they're definitely interesting folk.
And that interview will be coming to No Film School soon. It has what I think is the quote of the festival from Mike Birbiglia, who says, quote, "No motherfucking film school."
Yeah, I was very pleased when he, without any prompting, offered that one up for us. That was very nice.
So with 250 films at South By, it is not surprising that of the dozens of films that we've managed to see as a team, we also missed a lot of award winners. So we're going to talk a little bit about the ones we have seen, and you can see the full post of winners at nofilmschool.com. The winner for Best Narrative Feature was The Arbalest, which I did see at the premiere. It actually was not at all a packed house. It was a 9 p.m. Vimeo premiere, but it's a really visually arresting film. It's very production designed. I can't even describe it. The South by Southwest programmer introed it with, "This is a film about nothing," and which is an interesting way to intro a film. But obviously, it won the Narrative Feature Prize, so stay tuned for that one.
I also saw The Seer, which won the special jury recognition for visual design. It's a documentary about Wendell Berry by Laura Dunn. And the award went to Lee Daniel, the cinematographer, and it was very beautiful. Most of the footage is following tobacco farmers as they harvest their crops, and you actually have to leave them hanging up in barns for several weeks at a time until they dry. And you know, it was absolutely beautiful and captured beautiful landscapes and the agrarian life. So well-deserved for Lee Daniel this year.
The Karen Schmier Film Editing Fellowship actually went to a high school classmate of mine, Eileen Meyer, who was one of the stars of my absolutely horrible high school movie. But it was a good learning experience, and congratulations to Eileen. She edited Best of Enemies, which was at Sundance.
And you can actually listen to Eileen Meyer. She talked with us at Sundance about that film in our editor's roundtable, so check that out. It's on our YouTube page from Sundance 2015.
What was your high school movie about, Ryan?
Drinking.
Drinking in high school, that's not...
Drinking apple juice?
It was like the most derivative, dipping your toe in the water kind of movie. It was just an imitation of other movies at the time, which is a great way to learn and progress from there.
We all have to make one of those.
You should have made it about nothing. You could have won an award. And the jury award winner was Glove by Alexa Limhaas.
Yeah, and that was actually the animated short. And we actually also talked to one of the co-directors at Sundance about that too. And it's in a podcast with Bernardo Brito about short films. So if you want to hear more about Glove, the animated jury award winner, check that out.
Yeah, I was able to see the film Hunter Gatherer, which was the film that won for the best actor, Andre Royo, who is known from his performance as Bubbles. Yeah, on The Wire, which I've only seen six episodes of, so I
what?
I don't actually remember his performance from that.
Wow.
What?
But no, it was a great six episode.
Stop this podcast right now, Micah, and go right. Watch the remaining 4.5 seasons of The Wire.
All right, I'll see you guys
in next week.
2 years.
It's about 60 hours, I think. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's actually why I don't watch TV series. It's just too many man hours. I prefer poetry to prose. But no, I really enjoyed the six episodes of Solve the Wire, but I got a chance to interview Andre Royo and the team behind Hunter Gatherer. It's a film about a man who's just got out of prison and he's back home living with his mom, and everybody in his life has decided to move on and forget about him. And so he's kind of lost his sense of self. And this sounds like a really kind of dramatic, depressing story, but it's actually mostly a comedy and a kind of a spiritual successor to films like George Washington, which is, you know, it was executive produced by David Gordon Green. So yeah, Andre Royo's performance was charismatic and very different for what you're used to seeing from him.
So those were just some of the award winners, but we saw lots of other great films as well. And we've been, you know, interviewing and doing posts and pieces about all of these. So I had a great interview with Joe Berlinger, a pretty legendary documentary filmmaker, and that podcast will be coming up. He has a film in the festival called Tony Robbins, I Am Not Your Guru, about guess who? Tony Robbins, the motivational speaker, self-help guy. And it was kind of a shocker, this film, because Joe Berlinger is known as sort of exploring the darker subject matter in the world. He's made 12 features, and most of them are about things like brothers killing brothers or children killing children, or one you might have heard of is Metallica, Some Kind of Monster, where a heavy metal band goes into group therapy. Sounds like a funny premise, but it's a pretty dark film. This one is a whole different ballgame. It's basically this whole celebration of Tony Robbins. Apparently, Joe went to one of Tony's seminars. His life was changed, and he said, like, I have to bring people into this experience. The documentary basically brings the audience into this exclusive Tony Robbins once a year event, and you sort of watch people's lives change. And I have to say, it's one of the few docs that I've seen in a theater where people around me in the audience are crying. And it's not that they're crying because it's a sad, dark movie. They're crying because it's this very moving experience we're being brought into. And I have to give a shout out to Joe Berlinger because he was very kind in our interview. The way these things work, there are these press junkets. And so sometimes we get to interview filmmakers on our own terms, on our own turf, but sometimes we have to go to them in a suite with their publicist. And in this case, Tony Robbins himself was here at the festival and was being interviewed in the same suite. And of course, he's a public speaker and has a big booming voice. So in order to record a podcast and try to get some decent audio, Joe and I were wedged between the bathroom and the closet in the hotel room. So thanks, Joe, for putting up with that. It didn't smell too bad, I hope.
I saw a really cool documentary called Learning to See. It was directed by Jake Owelman and actually produced by Jerry Aronson, who you might know, he produced Chasing Ice. And Learning to See is basically about bugs and insects in South American rainforests and this unusual man named Robert Owelman who follows them. So if you're interested in macro photography and macro videography, this is a great film to see. And Jake Owelman, the director, basically was like a one-man band, and he was like traipsing through the jungle with all of his gear and a slider and filming, you know, these insanely unusual looking insects on a macro level. And it was very interesting. And Jerry Aronson, who produced Chasing Ice, it was sort of like on the opposite end of the spectrum, looking at things that were happening to the planet on the scale of, you know, huge ice and glaciers. And this is sort of the opposite, because we're looking at this like, tiny world where things are just like a millimeter big in some cases, but learning to see the world through this small macro thing. It was really great. Very, very delightful.
On the topic of documentaries, I saw Gleason, which is the chronicle of ex-NFL player Steve Gleason's battle with ALS. And it's this really intense, beautiful portrait of a father making video diaries to leave behind for his son, because the same time he's diagnosed with ALS, he finds out that his wife is pregnant and he wants to transfer as much as he can of himself to his son while he can. And that turns into a story that spans many years,
of his physical disintegration and his will to continue to be a hero for New Orleans and for people with ALS. I got a chance to talk to the director, Clay Tweel, who had the daunting task of sifting through 1,300 hours of footage to find this story. And he was just talking about the 7 months they had to get through all that footage and just going around the clock for months and months and months at a time with multiple editors trying to find the story and trying to do justice to this incredible, strong-willed family. And it's really beautiful and moving. And yeah, not a dry seat in the house. Of course, I saw it on a screener, so it was just me.
Yeah, I think the doc program was really, really strong this year. Another cool one I saw was Orange Sunshine by William Kirkley. It's this kind of trippy movie about the Brotherhood of Eternal Love, this group of hippies in the 60s who sort of kind of inadvertently became major international drug traffickers because they simply wanted to share LSD with the world after their first trip. The really interesting thing about this movie, well, there's two things. Interesting thing about production is that apparently the director had an entire film finished. He worked on it for 8 years, but he had never gotten to interview the couple that he really wanted to be at the center of the film because they were so skeptical after having bad press for many years and, of course, having participated in illegal activities. And once they saw that cut, they were like, oh, A, this guy is honest and sincere, and B, he doesn't have the story. So then they agreed to be interviewed by him, and he scrapped the entire film and started over. In the end, it was a 10-year process, and now it's premiered here at South by Southwest. And the other interesting thing about it is that he and his team have come up with this whole VR, virtual reality companion piece to go with the film, where basically you as the audience can put on the VR headset and experience an acid trip. Not only is it a documentary filmmaker who's playing in the VR space, but also one of the reasons they're doing it is that the virtual reality experience is not going to be available to just people with headsets yet. You have to come to the theater to experience it. So they're using it as a way to get butts in seats at a theater to come out and see the film. So I'll be really curious to see how that works out.
So South by Southwest is a discovery festival, meaning that many times the bigger names in, or the more established names in filmmaking are maybe at Sundance. And so the Grand Jury Prize winners here usually are people you've never heard of, which is great. They're breaking careers. They're first-time filmmakers. It also means that it's harder to look at a program guide and break it down and choose which of the 100 movies, which dozen of those you're going to see, especially when Micah was Johnny on the spot and got to it first. So a lot of the movies that I would have chosen, he was on first. So what I've seen has been a mixed bag, and oftentimes I'm seeing something that I don't know a lot about because we're trying to fit in so many movies and so many panels that you end up just looking at the grid, which looks like a Tetris game of colored blocks that you're trying to fit together, and then you go see something. So I ended up seeing a movie called Shovel Buddies, which is a story about a group of high school friends whose teammate dies of cancer, and they get sent off on this mission to fulfill his dying wish. And it stars Kean Lawley and Bella Thorne, which are social media stars, real life teenagers. There's a lot to be said about casting people who already have a following. But as with many high school movies, the memory of high school, I think, is different from the reality of it. And oftentimes when that material is interpreted by much older people, it doesn't quite feel as authentic as I would have hoped. And so when the directors came out at the end of the movie and they were middle-aged men, you know, they're very talented guys, Simon Atkinson and Adam Townley. But it is, I was hoping it was going to be a YouTube star who came up that way behind the camera. And instead it was more of a traditional film. Michael, you saw a teenage film as well?
Yeah, I saw Clay Lifeward's Slash. It's a film about teen fan fiction, but not any teen fan fiction, teen erotic fan fiction. So it's sort of exploring the burgeoning sexuality of 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds through the internet, which is sort of a new thing, you know, for a lot of teens growing up. They have access to a lot of sexual content on the internet and let their imaginations run wild via their favorite fantasy novels or franchise or what have you. It was based on a short film that Clay made that was actually based on Harry Potter erotica. And he turned it into a much larger story and framed it in a fictional fantasy world that he created for the feature called Vanguard. And there's some sequences where we actually dive inside the world and we see the characters. He shot on sets that were used in the old Star Trek films, you know, out in the desert. And you see, there's a lot of humor to it. You see these, you know, the bad guy and the good guy fighting with their shirts off and their nipples sticking out. And it's like really funny. The interesting part about the film is that they're able to shoot in like Comic-Con conventions, because that's a section of the film where these two main characters traverse to a Comic-Con type event for where there's a reading of the erotic fan fiction. And so there was a bit of guerrilla style shooting in these conventions, and they stitched locations together to make it feel like they were actually shooting in a big setting. So that was a pretty interesting element, which you can find more about in the post with Clay.
So Ryan, I'm curious, like when you saw Shovel Buddies, how full of a house was it?
I mean, that's a good talking point about festival attendance overall. The house for Shovel Buddies was mostly full. The interesting thing about it was how different the audience was than your typical film festival audience. I was sitting a couple of rows in front of Bella Thorne and Kian Lawley, and many of their teen fans were in front of me, just periodically looking over their shoulder at their idols throughout the movie. And so the audience was a lot younger, and it was great to see that. I'm really curious to see how that translates into the release of the film. It was produced by a company called Awesomeness TV, which has a YouTube channel. So whether that movie is going to come out via traditional channels is a big question. You know, maybe it's going to be on YouTube Red or some other service. Maybe that's where the audience actually is.
I'm wondering if like the reviews will be coming from, you know, different sources as well. You know, I mean, kids who came to see it, they're not going to be super interested in like a Variety review. They're going to be looking to see on Twitter, like who was like, this film was great.
And I will say, I think that the stunt casting of social media stars worked out really well. I think that they really acquitted themselves in terms of their on-screen performance. So we'll see what kind of, how long the legs are or where those legs go, if that's, you know, if it even goes to theaters, or we'll see.
Yeah,
I think what you call stunt casting is pretty soon just going to be called casting, because so many people are being cast based off their social media presence these days. And it's,
yeah. So what does stunt casting mean? That's, you know, when you cast. I mean, I'm just
only stunt
not
people.
Tarantino did it in Death Wish.
Right. Yep. Death Proof.
Death Proof.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's cast her in every movie since. But no, stunt casting just being like, you know, casting somebody for a reason other than their acting ability traditionally, so you know, to get attention, or something, you know, something that's more media worthy versus something that's like a merit of a performance inherently.
Song Freedom was the first and still only music licensing company to offer top 40 hits from every major record label and publisher to event filmmakers, and now they're creating something special for all kinds of filmmakers.
If you're tired of a limited selection of music that's overpriced, or just can't stomach the generic elevator music anymore, then you need to check out Song Freedom.
Register for free to get on their mailing list for the upcoming announcement of thousands of additional songs and a new pricing structure that will blow your mind in just 2 weeks.
Once you've registered with Song Freedom, you can also get news about their next big giveaway of over $50,000 in free gear and other products. Don't miss the most exciting thing to happen to filmmakers since the DSLR. Go to songfreedom.com and register today. It's incredibly easy. So I mentioned attendance a second ago. This is our, I don't know, our third or fourth festival for Oakley and Micah and myself. But in terms of talking about festival trends and what's changed over the years, Liz is the authority on that. Liz, is this your 10th South By?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on Harry Potterotica from Micah's blurb there. But yeah, it's my 10th year, I'm pretty sure. This year's really, really different. I think we can all speak to being here as press versus being here as other things. For me, it's quite different. I think it might feel different because I'm much less drunk. I mean, one thing that happens at this festival is sort of people are constantly handing you alcohol from the morning, you know, morning events till the evening. So
they should do that more for press.
Maybe. So I have not partaken as much this year since we are working really, really hard. It's an interesting way to experience a festival. Maybe you guys can, you know, speak to it too. but it's sort of, we're in a unique insider outsider position.
Right. As filmmakers at a festival, you're there with your crew, literally your film crew usually. And so you travel in packs and you have events to go to. Whereas for the four of us, we are a crew here, but it's very much about dividing and conquering. So I find myself grabbing meals, not even sitting, but and not even standing, usually walking somewhere to try and get to another panel or an event. And so it's this interesting experience of being surrounded by people you know, and you know, we're here together in a house, but at the same time, it's like this solo experience of trying to get from one thing to another and really just being on your feet all the time.
Basically, every day at the convention center for me is going to like the like convention center deli and then like shoving a sandwich in my face alone at a table in the 10 minutes between a film screening and a panel.
Like a $10 sandwich.
Yeah, it's like high school all over again.
Wow. In a town full of tacos, that makes me so sad to hear that. I will say one thing they've added in the last couple years is this South Bites part of the conference. So there's all these new spin-offs of South by Southwest and new integrations of like various other topics. And so one of them is the South Bites. That's my favorite because they've added a whole food truck section. And, you know, food trucks are a trend. South by Southwest tries to be on top of trends. And these are like all of Austin's top food trucks. And Oakley and I went there the other night, and there's like food trucks that come from all over the country to be part of this.
A woman came all the way from South Carolina.
Yeah.
Just to serve food at South by.
So that's pretty delicious if we actually have time to get some.
Exactly. Those food trucks are like 30 feet away, so they're too far away. We have to go to the one that's...
Yeah, it's 25 feet too many.
Exactly.
Is that over on Rainy Street? Rainy Street, I think.
In terms of what's different, though, aside from these kind of new spinoff events, is that I think all of us have noticed, even you know, from your recent years here, that the film festival is actually... The festival as a whole has been much, much more chill this year. And the first sort of buzz I heard about that was, wow, things are really quiet this year. It's much different than years past. But what I realized in my sort of longer term view is that it's sort of come back around to how it was before. So for a few years when South by Southwest was like sort of almost jumping the shark, you couldn't get into any parties. There were lines for everything. Everyone was sort of grouchy. The brand sponsorships overtook the whole town. And that's kind of still happening, except a couple years ago, I'm sure you guys heard, this is a pretty tragic story. A couple of kids got killed standing in line because the streets were so overpacked, and a drunk motorcyclist veered off and ran into a couple of people that were waiting in one of those long, long lines for a venue. And I think since then, things have just kind of shifted, and some of that was intentional. I understand that the police have closed off different streets, and there's different sort of crowd management. But also, it's just made things a little bit more chill. So one way to look at it is, oh man, is, you know, the question is South by Southwest kind of fading as a platform for filmmakers? And another way to look at it is this becoming actually a more pleasant experience again? You can come to parties. You can, you know, you still have people at your films. It's still a reputable festival. There's still a lot of enthusiasm, but you can actually manage it without, for example, getting hit by a motorcycle.
Yeah, that was my first South by Southwest when that happened. I was a few blocks away, so I remember how big of a, you know, how terrible that was. And I remember that year, transportation alone, it was like I stood in line an hour to get a taxi. And this year, there seems to be a lot better transportation options. So I think that helps, like, in, you know.
Yeah, you can tell how big the festival is and how many attendees there are by the pricing of your Lyft and your Uber.
Yeah. Definitely.
I think also that those ride-sharing apps have gotten so competitive that they just decided we're not going to do surge pricing because the ability to get around via taxi has been incredibly easy this year.
Compared to years past, for sure. It's like there's people standing on every corner from Lyft and other platforms I hadn't even heard of before giving away like $10 free ride coupons. I'm like, wow, okay.
But I think beyond the festival attending experience, I don't have the 10 years of experience to draw on. And Micah and Oakley, as you know, at last year's South By, I sat in a house the entire time working on my script for Amateur. So I missed literally everything except for one movie. And when I went to a movie, I went to the wrong movie on my last day there. So I don't have...
We never saw Ryan last year.
Well, you saw me all the time sitting in front of my laptop with earplugs in. That was not the most fun South By. But this year I did talk to several friends about sort of the trends and what's different. And both in tech and in film, the sort of big names of people who are throwing parties or the big names at distributors, apparently those attendances are down. You know, on the interactive side, some of the people who are always known to throw like the biggest party just aren't here this year. And some of the senior executives at distribution companies that are making acquisitions aren't here. So they're doing some screenings in New York and LA.
I kind of wonder if that's going to be a continuing trend at like all festivals. Because I know even at Sundance, they'd mentioned a few films had screened beforehand. And I know that's happening here. I wonder if this is a larger trend, not even just South By, but are less executives even coming to the festival and just like watching the private Vimeo screener from their office in New York?
I don't know, though. I think it points to the whole shift in the industry, because the places where I have seen the longest lines and actually haven't been able to get in aren't parties. It's at the convergence panels, meaning the panels in the convention center that are about film and. So film and the internet, film and virtual reality, film and TV. And, you know, that's pointing to an industry shift. And the companies, you know, the big companies that are on the ground or are seeming to do acquisitions are the digital ones. So all of us have seen someone from Vimeo on some panel or another. And Vimeo had their big party this year that Oakley and I got to go to for a little bit. And Netflix, we know, is making a bunch of acquisitions, including some of the ones we saw, like Asperger's R Us that Oakley did the interview with.
Yeah, they just got picked up by Netflix. And there's certainly plenty of distributors still here. And there's, especially for documentary, like I said in our earlier Indie Film Weekly, they seem to be getting bought more and more. But
so stay tuned to the No Film School podcast, where you will be able to hear the composer and director of Asperger's R Us with the actual music from the film. So you can listen to that and hear them discuss their collaborative process. Speaking of Vimeo, they've done a lot of things at the festival, as you mentioned, Liz. But Micah, they did a live director's commentary session.
Yeah, Vimeo's up to a lot of interesting stuff. Yeah, I've seen him on panels. Peter Gerard from Vimeo had a really interesting talk yesterday about the future of film fandom. Vimeo had a really cool event last night, which was a live director's commentary. So they showed 5 short films in the Vimeo theater, of course. And then after the 5 short films played, they played them again, but they brought out the directors and they turned the sound down and the directors did a live a commentary of their own film. And that was really...
That is so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And not
you
only...
You went to that?
What?
You went to that?
I did. Yeah, it was just one of those things where you're in the convention center and you're looking for something to do and it just popped up and I was like, I'm going to check that out. And that's kind of a cool thing. Like just being curious and going into things leads to a lot of interesting stuff. But I think that this event is definitely a testament to Vimeo's like commitment to elevating the work that's on their platform. And, you know, each time the director would come up at the end of it, you know, they'd basically say, you know, we're trying to make this into something bigger. And so it really allowed these filmmakers a platform to say, hey, like we're here too, like at this festival, even though these films aren't in the program of the festival, they basically were. So I found that to be pretty interesting. And also I didn't realize just the sheer, I mean, Vimeo gets 200 million uniques a month. And I knew they're huge, obviously, as a streaming platform, but that's like just a huge amount of traffic. And I didn't realize that. Also, speaking of Netflix, I got some really interesting stats on Netflix. I mean, you talk about Netflix making acquisitions. I mean, they announced they have a $5 billion budget for content this year. And last year, the total US box office was $11 billion. So Netflix has a huge portion of the content this year in terms of the power that they have to create content. That's, of course, balanced out by the fact that they're acquiring more expensive content and they're getting into creating more kind of premium stuff with bigger production and bigger stars and all this stuff. But
they're making indies too.
Indeed.
So Micah, from that Vimeo panel on director's cuts, I think we're going to try and bring that to No Film School in some form, because those shorts are available on Vimeo publicly, right?
Yeah, all of them except for one, which was a premiere. They didn't actually tell us it was a premiere until it was all over. They forgot to mention that. But yeah, so 4 of the 5 shorts have already been on Vimeo for a while under the staff pick sections. And this screening was specifically a staff pick event.
So one of the things that's just great for me to see is the evolution of us covering festivals in general. It's always like the first time we go to a South By for No Film School, there's one person and then there's a couple and now there's 4 here. And we would very much like to thank our staff that aren't here, but that are really helping us turn out these podcasts and edit our posts. Oftentimes you're writing a post in a note-taking app and sending it to an editor, and there's no images, and a lot of it doesn't make sense, and your sentences are incomplete. So Emily Booter, John Fusco, V. Renee, thank you for turning our incomplete sentences into complete sentences.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. You know, I just have to say, you know, South by 2014, that was the first time I came, and that was like, it was the beginning. And that was actually the first time I ever really went to a big, like, top tier festival. And I think what people listening might be curious to hear is that for me, the process has been really cool, because before I had this idea of what a film, like a big film festival was. It sounds so exclusive and, oh my God, yeah, right, I would never go there and like network. That just doesn't sound like me. But now that I've been here 3 years, I just kind of have a different take on it, because now it's really just about seeing other filmmakers who are working in the industry, well, whatever that means, working on films and just as hard as they can to make work. And it's really just about meeting them and sharing things you have in common. And there's really no other place, unless you live in a town that has a film scene, that you can go to just meet that those many other people that are your peers. So I used to have a very like sort of a intimidating feel about festivals. And now that it's my third year at South By, I'm just like, this is really great. And I think that anyone at home who's never been or thinks that maybe it's not for them, like, you guys should definitely come out and come find us and come find me, because I'll be in the conference in the convention center eating a sandwich by myself.
Yeah, and I may be a South by Southwest veteran, but this is my first time here with the No Film School team, and I'm also the newest one here on the No Film School team. So thank you guys for you know, helping me along in this process and for being such a great team. We've turned out a lot of great stuff this week, and there's more to come in the next several days. And yeah, thanks for working hard and letting me be part of it.
We're so great. We're so great. Oh, we're so great.
Typical Micah. In this second recording of Indie Film Weekly, or Indie Film Biweekly, we're wrapping up the group coverage here, but we have a lot of episodes coming, a lot more posts coming to No Film School, so please subscribe. We've got the directors of Collective Unconscious, all five of them on the podcast. I know, Liz, you mentioned Joe Berlinger, who's a legend in the documentary filmmaking world. Oakley, you were just talking about filmmaking scenes and being in close proximity to one or not. We have one coming about the Austin filmmaking scene, which has evolved over the years quite a bit. And if you like these longer, in-depth conversations, by all means, go back and check out our episodes from Sundance. There is a film here called Miles Ahead at South By, which we did an interview with the director of photography at Sundance, Roberto Schaefer. We did four Screenwriters Lab fellows from Sundance. The Birth of a Nation was a film that everyone was talking about because it set the film festival record. We did an interview with the director of photography the day after the premiere. So we are, as a group, really enjoying these podcasts. We hope you all are subscribed. But if you're not, make sure to go to iTunes, search for No Film School. We've heard some people are having trouble finding it, so tell us if you are. Search for No Film School, 3 words, or search No Film School, 1 word. And as always, you can find all of these podcasts at nofilmschool.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening.